Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, wishes he could be Bill Murray Williams.
Okay. That's a weird one today.
Well, it matches with the kind of theme that we're going to be talking about. Groundhog Day?
Yeah, I don't want to be in that movie at all. It sounds like hell on earth.
And back to round out this theme of the month in Summer Flings is intern slash part-timer slash visitor slash...
I have a visitor's badge?
Apparently. Intern Amy is here.
Hi.
We're excited. This is the final leg of our journey through our list of Summer Flings, and this week's episode is a doozy. We are excited to talk about it, and we hope you are too. But before we do, Spencer... give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and our Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. Check out over 270 episodes on our website. We got everything from anime to action to drama. Well, I don't think we really did drama. I don't know. There's stuff for everybody. You gotta go look at the library. I don't know. I'm just work here. Check us out, filmlosophers.com. Like I said, there's something for everybody. This is, like we said, this has been a unique journey for all of us here as we've gone through Amy's picks for the Summer Fling.
And look how you're just pinning most
it's,
of this.
Oh, yeah. Money. It's Blame the Intern.
It is. This is Blame the Intern month. You know, I've had to do, well, not minimal, but not as much work for this month. So I'm happy about that. Don't give me that look. Okay, that look. I'm excited to talk about this movie because mainly for the fact that this is a movie that I have never seen. So
it's the rare instance where I've seen a movie and you haven't.
That is very true. And I blame you for not telling me about this sooner.
Don't blame.
I did.
He's a blamer.
I just did. And I do it again. I blame you. We are talking about the 2020 Hulu release film of Palm Springs. This movie debuted during the midst of a very chaotic time for all of us, and needless to say,
trapped. It's a year of being trapped. Let's be honest; it wasn't chaos; it was trapped. And there's a movie.
This movie really just kind of slid under the radar. Not many people had seen it. I mean, although a lot of people were at home not doing anything else, so it was kind of a toss-up whether or not to watch the film or just continue sulking in your life of having to be trapped in your home. Sadly, I missed the boat on this one, and I'm kind of happy, kind of upset that I hadn't seen it for myself. I'll put it on myself, Spencer.
Good, as you should.
But before we move forward and dive into the film, Spencer, why don't you give him this official synopsis goodness?
When carefree Niles and reluctant maid of honor, Sarah, have a chance encounter at Palm Springs' wedding, things get complicated the next morning when they find themselves unable to escape the venue themselves or each other.
That's right. Directed by Max... how do you pronounce that last name?
Carefully.
Okay. Max Barbaco. The film stars Andy Sandberg, Kristen Milioti, Peter Gallagher, and J.K. Simmons. Premiering at the Sundance Film Festival back in January of 2020, the film actually holds the record for the biggest sale of a film at $17,500,069, actually beating the previous record by 69 cents. It also breaks the record for most viewed Hulu releases in its first weekend on the streaming service. That really says a lot in terms of the people who have been talking about the movie, people who have been like kind of out of word of mouth at that point in time, outside of whatever is online. A lot of what was on people's minds at the time was the fact that we couldn't go to the theaters, that people were just, you know, doing home type movies, like movies on Zoom or Zoom, you know, movies that were previously set to release later on, but, you know, given the opportunity, they released it during the pandemic. But nevertheless, this was a movie that landed on one of the, and I don't mean to say this in a derogatory way, but one of the lesser streaming services.
That's meant to be derogatory.
I mean, it's true. It's not like, it's not in the echelon of like HBO Max, Netflix, and Disney Plus. Sorry, drew a blank there.
You also understand two of those that you just named literally came out within the last year.
Last 2 years.
Okay, 2 years.
Thank you. So, and so, and seeing as the pandemic was the last year, I'd say that's kind of what we're talking about here. Okay, I'll hand it over in just a second. So, honestly, the fact that this movie, just to put it blankly, most streaming service films aren't usually that high quality. You know, yeah. I think here on the Filmlosophers, I don't know what intern Amy does with her show, but here we've had an ample amount of opportunities to review streaming films, like actual films, original films from streaming services.
Right.
And don't give me that look.
I am just perplexed where he's going
with
this.
Slamming everything in his path.
This is the raging... This is
Godzilla over there.
Oh.
What? All I'm saying is there's an expectation with a lot of the quality of films that come out from these streaming services. I mean, you take a look at just about every action film that comes out of Netflix, and yeah, maybe they'll have a big name attached to it, but they're not great quality films. And by quality, I mean the quality of the story, even some of the acting. It doesn't matter if you put Chris Hemsworth in it, doesn't matter if you put Ben Affleck in it, it doesn't matter who you put in it. There's kind of this expectation that's set for most of the streaming movies. And so when it came to Hulu, to be quite honest, I wasn't very familiar with a lot of original works from Hulu that were released by them. But needless to say, I was hesitant about this one. But I'm glad, though, that we are actually choosing to take up this film and review it. And so back over to Amy, why did you choose this one?
Because I didn't have an idea for the fourth week. No, to be very honest. It's very honest. So, of course, going into this fourth week of Summer Flings in Cinema, I had tipped all of my rom-com / comedy with romance thing. Like, my cards
rom-com
were done.
Rom-com with romance? Romantic comedy with romance?
Comedy
rom-coms
romance.
With extra romance. So, rom-com roms.
Rom-com roms.
Yeah. Rom-coms. So I had basically run out of ideas in running them past Eddie about something that would be acceptable. I had a couple.
I heard he was slapping him down a lot.
Left and right. This, yes, I very much my so. Ideas were flies, and he had the big hand bug zapper, like the really big one. There had been another option as an honorable mention, but that one didn't seem to connect because technically there's no romance as much as there is something, a relationship. Anyway, Mr. Spencer came up and goes, "Hey, what about this movie?" And I looked at Eddie and he looked at me and we're like, "We haven't seen it." Yeah. And Spencer's like, "Yes, this is good."
So,
and therefore, Palm Springs was born into our list.
When did you first see this film?
I'm pretty sure it
Spencer,
was...
Spencer, sorry. I just threw that out there.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was pretty close to when it came out. I think I was working on my computer and I needed a table, so I took it downstairs and my roommate had just turned it on. I was like, oh, a Hulu original. Oh, this is going to be fancy. Like, I was expecting this to be garbage. Like, absolutely.
No.
The worst garbage.
100%. And mind you, that expectation is, like, right on the money.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so then, like, it was just on, and I was working on my computer, and I was like, is this movie watchable? Like, this movie seems hecka watchable right now.
Yeah.
And it was. Mm-hmm. It was really watchable.
Yeah, it
was repeat watchable because you watched it again.
Yeah, I watched it again today.
Hey,
we've been burned so many times. I think Netflix and their effort to constantly push out original movies really kind of left a burnt taste in our mouth when it came to streaming service original films. There hasn't been a lot to go on in terms of looking over successes over losses, because of the fact that, I mean, if you were to account for like the actual wins from certain original streaming service films. I mean, what? You got Roma. You know, you got maybe Cloverfield Paradox. You know, you got... It's very slim pickings.
It's more aimed for originals coming... streaming originals as series. Mm. Limited yeah. series. Documentaries, but they still piece them together as series. And it's very rare to find a streaming movie that not only holds its own, but doesn't take a, and I say this with affection, a Sharknado approach to a topic. And I've seen some of the filming for Sharknado, and I was like, oh, this could have been an original streaming movie.
Yeah. Amy, why don't you go ahead and take the helm on this one and kind of take over? Because honestly, the movie itself, I'm anxious to talk about it, but I'm also wanting to, you know, make sure we cover all our bases and everything.
Well, so since Spencer was like, is this watchable? He's given us kind of our expectation of, I was sitting at the table one day working on my computer. What about
almost
you?
Sounds like a blues song. I was sitting at the table. Do, 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 do. Sorry.
We could do Blues Brothers, but no. That'd be a different one. So what was your first impression was that it was going to be a hot trash fire?
Well, so back last year, I'd heard about this film making its rounds on Hulu. And to be quite frank, I am not a big fan of Andy Samberg. I don't really find his humor funny. I mean, he's good for like the little skits that they do on SNL, but after SNL... it just didn't seem like there was much that he did that I was like, oh, yeah, definitely. He's a superb actor, you know, or funny, whatever. I don't know. I didn't really see him as a palatable actor that I wanted to see on in any project. I kind of held to that for a long time, obviously. But the idea behind the film sounded fun. The idea behind the premise and it coming from, obviously, from Sundance, you know, there had to be some credence to the story. I just really didn't like Andy Samberg. And I didn't know if he made the film for some people and didn't make it for others. So I kind of went with the safe side of that and just didn't watch it mm-hmm. for fear that I would, like, subvert my expectations and just really kind of fall with the people who are disappointed. So coming into it now, my first expectation of the film was, please don't let Andy Samberg tank this too much. Just to be frank, like I'm being honest, 100% honest, I didn't know what his abilities were, and I didn't know what to expect other than I, at the time, thought for sure I wasn't going to like Andy Samberg, and I wasn't going to enjoy... what this film, you know, entailed with him a part of it.
No, I can fully agree with that. My impression initially of seeing it, I was like, wow, it's really bright and it's at Andy Samberg. And while the Lonely Island Classics, which is the production company from the Lonely Island Boys, they had such amazing, and I say with air quotes, films as Hot Rod, MacGruber, The Watch. They were Samberg was in Grown Ups 2, Neighbors, Pop Star, Never Stopping, Michael Bolton's Big Sexy Valentine's Day Special, Brigsby Bear, The Unauthorized Bash Brothers Experience, Palm Springs, and then another one, I Used to Go Here. I was pretty much in the same boat. I have actually been super apprehensive to watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine simply because I did
That's
not.
That's another one.
Okay,
yeah.
So. Just popping in, I've only seen this movie with Adam Sandler, so I had a lot less against him. And like, my roommates also watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so I just pop in and see him. I'm like, oh, this show seems cool.
Yeah. So and like, that's the thing that I was like, I'm used to Andy Samberg in Small, I'm on a Boat, The Tale of Captain Jack Sparrow. Like all of, if you haven't seen the SNL skits, or that very particular one about things and boxes. Thank you, Justin Timberlake. Now you know. I could handle him in small spurts, but then when I started seeing him outside of, I'm not going to say controlled environments, but kind of those parameters, some of his stuff was just a little, it was Jack and Jill.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And I couldn't handle it. And then with the success of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I want to watch it, but I was, and I'm still, this has kind of teetered more in that direction of my willingness to, but I was super apprehensive because I'm like, ugh.
Well, and just like with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it's in the similar vein as like SNL and what they've done with Lonely Island is just.
Yeah, the Lonely Island Boys, but their production company is called Lonely Island Classics.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah.
Trust me, but just like that, like in those small spurts, like seeing him for like maybe 2-3 minutes, you know, in a scene or in a skit, that seemed to be like the most I could tolerate Andy Samberg. And I don't mean to say that he's a horrible person. I'm pretty sure he's a wonderful person out there. It's just his acting is just not to my, you know, to my appeal. And like the scene from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I don't even know what episode. I just know it's the scene where they do the whole like Backstreet or NSYNC.
When they're singing at the
in the lineup.
No, it's Backstreet Boys.
It is Backstreet Boys. But that whole scene, that was funny. I've tried to see full episodes of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but it's just not my humor. It's like heavy Adam Samberg to the fullest.
Adam Sandberg. It's hardcore Adam Sandberg, and he's no longer jizzing in pants. He's mother lovers, like.
So yeah,
it's bad that I know okay. these songs, Spencer.
So yeah, I think yeah. The biggest part of my just non-attraction to him is just his over the top comedy, like him being way doing the most. But you're lucky that you don't have that much.
Yeah, you and I have very different experiences.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I think that kind of sets the stage for like our expectations.
Yeah, but so let's talk about our first impressions. And since Spencer,
what?
I was going to talk to Spencer, but since you're the first watcher, I wanted to ask Spencer because he had already had practice. Anyway,
he had already had practice.
He had seen this once, so he kind of now he's looking back with a.
Don't you ever practice watch a film?
What? Yeah. You're preparing yourself. That's how I try to get around, like watching first horror impressions. Movies. First impressions, Eduardo, across the table.
My first impression was coming out of the room and getting upset with Spencer that he had not told me about this film sooner. And I hold him 100% to this.
You just said that it was also on you, like literally less than 5 minutes ago.
Oh, Thank you, Amy. Yeah.
Okay. We'll add stenographer to the list of her accolades. Okay. Cool.
Yes.
No, I felt like this was a movie that I'm kicking myself that I should have seen last year because my bias kept me from seeing a really fun and honestly fulfilling film. The fact that Andy Samberg is very much funny but also plays that dramatic role as well on equal level of perfection, I guess. And not to mention with him co-starring with, you know, Kristen Milioti and J.K. Simmons, there's a beautiful mixture, a beautiful chemistry to this film that just makes for a really awesome experience. I am, like I told Spencer, I am excited that I saw it, but mad at myself that I didn't see it sooner. So, no.
I can feel the same way, since my first viewing was a few hours ago. It was the sequel you never thought you needed to a movie that, or the sequel that shouldn't exist to a movie that you didn't think needed one. It was just a delightful experience. It doesn't entirely parallel Groundhog's Day, which is great. And
is that what you're saying it's a sequel to?
Yeah, it's how the director or the writer, they explained it like it's a sequel to a movie that doesn't exist, or something like that. I will find it. But I was really struck by how balanced Andy Samberg was in this, that it wasn't too over the top. He wasn't too much of a horn dog. The rest of the supporting cast balanced really well. The testing all the different things within the timeline, within the day, or in the loop, the time loop, was great. And J.K. Simmons was just a stinking surprise. Like, the first time he shows up, I was like, what is that? And then he talked. I'm like, J.K. Simmons, what the heck? Like, it was great. And then the story builds, and the main character, Sarah, with an H, seeing her story evolve, and just it was so delightful that I was like, okay, this is awesome and weird. Spencer.
Yeah, so going into today, I was like, I hope this movie's as good as I remember it, because like the last thing I wanted to do is blame for something. And I was right, it was good, and I am happy.
And you're still getting blamed.
And you're still getting blamed.
Yeah, but it's for something else, so I don't care.
Yay! But speaking of blame, does anybody have any actors that they want to blame for just amazing performances, besides us keep saying gushing about Andy Samberg, or instances where there is gush? I tried to segue blame and it doesn't work well.
Yeah, I can see that. I think one of the really big highlights, obviously, in this film is you can have a great performer, but you can't have a great performer shine by himself. And with Kristen Milioti being a part of this film, she adds so much to his character, so much to his like blossoming of the mindset, because you're in this, you know, this ambiguous time loop of however much time has actually passed for one person, whereas you can kind of quantify if you had, you know, some kind of basis for Sarah, for Kristen Milioti's character, you can honestly say she's been in this time loop in less time than Andy Samberg's character. The thing is, there's no way of really knowing how long Andy Samberg has been in this time loop. I mean, there's a statement that said, you know, well, we hooked up 1,000 times, which means there's 1,000 days of him having hooked up with someone during the course of this time loop. At the very minimum, just her. Yeah.
And he, even when they're sitting on the side of the road, or it's not even when they're sitting on the side of the road with the cop, when they're about to get arrested, she asks him about his sex life and who he's been hooking up with, and he kind of lists onesie twosies, but he doesn't go into anything else on purpose. And then you come to find out much later that it's 1,000 times, and she's like, I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. But she really adds a lot to the role. She really brings a lot of that balance to where at the beginning, where Andy Samberg is his ultimately most goofy and slyest at some point, and her being at the most stern, most just hating life, the most lowest point of what she's got going on. And then you take that and you begin to see how the two characters begin to almost meld into one another in terms of the goofiness and the uniqueness, where you get this beautiful balance by the time the film gets to that end point where they're both on even keel of, you know, this is who I am, this is who you are, you know, what does a life together look like kind of thing. And it's a really beautiful evolution, to be quite frank. You take somebody who has been in existence in this loop for God knows how long, and you introduce a new factor, and this new factor could just be something, you know, non-important, but then it turns into something that way, and it turns into something wonderful, and it's this beautiful thing, and it actually helps by having great performances on both sides. So I think there's really a lot to say about her role in this film and her ability to, you know, match, you know, toe-to-toe for everything that Andy Samberg gives in his efforts of comedy with her efforts of, you know, creating that roundedness, if you will, almost kind of a dark side roundedness and bringing it to like that center medium section.
Yeah.
Fun fact, according to the writer Andy Sierra of the movie, Niles had been stuck in that loop for 40 years.
40 years?
Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Oh. Which makes some things about the end make a little bit more sense about certain people's hesitations on things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I kind of like these two together a lot in this movie, especially just they're real goofy together, especially when they spent so much time learning to perfect a dance that they did in a bar for no reason.
So brilliant.
But it looked great.
Yeah, it did. Was there anybody else that you saw?
J.K. Simmons as Roy was just a sheer delight in that it's this mysterious, we come to find out, spoilers, you guys, that Andy Samberg's character Niles had decided one time within the loop to party with Roy, who is the groom's like cousin of the groom. And he drove in from Irvine to be here for the wedding. They partied really hard, and he essentially takes J.K. Simmons, Roy, into the desert to go into the magical, mystical cave that starts the time loop. And then he's just randomly gone about and tortured, murdered, shot,
pretty sure killed at some point
a couple of times, Niles. And it literally starts that kind of that flashback with the naked booty of Andy Samberg just running down the hills, and he's like, "You better run!" And I'm like, "JK, oh my gosh!" And then when you finally do get to have a conversation, where Niles and Andy's character has come to find Roy to have a conversation and ask about, like, what have I done? What's going on? You see that JK, his character, Roy, is so happy. Like, yes, he's been trapped here for however many years too now. But every day he gets to be with his family. He gets to see him. And he laments that he will never see them grow up, that he's trapped in this too. But it's having that opportunity to keep reliving that perfect day. And you can see his hesitation to ever leave the loop versus at that point in the movie where Niles is like, I'm ready to go. I'm scared, but I want to. Random performer that caught my attention was Misty, who was Andy Samberg's girlfriend.
Meredith Hagner.
She's so left field. Just what? What?
Yeah, every time she opens her
mouth
with the what?
Yes. It is, she's the bride's best friend, and this girl is, I can't even say token white girl. Like, this is, there's so many questions. Not only is she cheating on Andy Samberg with the cowboy, the Asian cowboy minister?
From Australia?
From Australia, yeah. Who had some type of, like, colorful chalk multicolored box in his pocket that people are snorting
because it's like his magical pills or something,
because it's like green and blue and whatever,
and yellow, and there's different colors.
I'm like,
he's the Willy Wonka of drugs,
right?
So when Sarah first gets into the loop, the very first day she gets into the loop, she wakes up, she kind of freaks out, she's like, we've already lived this day. She goes and charges out to find Niles in the pool, who realizes, oh crud, she's figured out she's in the time loop too. And her sister, Tala, totally eats it on the pavement by the pool and knocks out three of her teeth. And so there's literally just hysterical women crying on a couch. Mm-hmm. And then we get, it's, I almost said, Peter
Gallagher?
Yeah. He's playing the dad. He's a very small part. He's playing the dad, but he's like trying to calm them down, trying to help everything. And he's like, we got a dentist who's going to glue teeth. We're going into town. And it's so just every spot you see Misty, you start slowly loathing her and just going, you're a puppet in this. And every day, you have to think about every single day he's woken up to this woman for 40 years.
Yep.
And he says the same thing. And at one point, he just mocks her and does an entire mimicry of what she's doing. And stop copying me! Stop copying me! Like, it's so weirdly brilliant, and you need it because it's just absolute lunacy. Like, there's no way that you could do this without someone that, like, cuckoo.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that, you know, the people, the casting director really picked solid folks for this film. All around, from, like you said, the officiant to the girlfriends to the bros to, you know,
Randy,
what's the name of Spud,
the guy who's the one that has the guns that you go out to the range to shoot. The man's name is Spud. You meet him for two scenes. That's all you need to know about Spud. Or Darla in the bar.
Darla in the bar, yeah. All the different casting choices in the film were just perfect. They were all spot on because they all worked well together. No one stood out to steal the show, although there was rumor that the editors had to actually go back in post-production after the film had screened and actually tone down Abe's abs, because apparently during screen tests they were more distracting than they should have been.
What?
No joke. So
this is going to sound really weird. So the guy that's playing Abe, what's his name? He's the new Superman, Clark Kent on CW.
Tyler Hoechlin or something?
I don't know you. You're not my type of thing. The best part for me was when he had a fork stabbed in his face.
True.
Like,
very true.
I was just like, okay, you're way, no thank you. But they had to tone down his abs. So I guess kudos for you.
Like, I don't even understand what that means.
Like, I don't
like the they, to they make had to look fatter.
No,
something.
They had to actually lighten that particular area so his abs weren't as defined.
Oh,
so they basically took the smudge tool and were like,
pretty much. I'm pretty sure if we rewound it and really looked at it, it almost looked like a like on those cop episodes. Those cops episodes where they had to blur out people's faces. Yeah,
like we're gonna pixelate your abs right now, buddy.
But. Jumping over to, because I know talking about acting, having great actors and having great performers are key to having a successful film, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thing is that if we go back, looking at streaming services, I mean, have you guys, prior to the debut of the HBO Max era and some... No, I'm going to include Disney Plus because they've had a couple of whoppers. Do you feel like this movie surpasses what we've recognized as kind of the norm quality expectations for streaming service originals?
I'm going to go with yes. Because while Netflix has put out, like, you know, some original movies that I did like See You Yesterday or something like that.
I almost thought you were trying to say Always Be My Maybe, and I was like, I don't think that's the right one.
No, we're not singing here.
This one was just pure fun. And this is also one I could, like, really see in a theater, like, doing well type thing. And so I don't really, like, there's nothing that anyone else has done that I feel like is up to this quality. And I'm not counting any of Disney's early access nonsense.
No, those are not Disney Plus originals.
Those don't count.
You know, And it's really difficult to say, like, going back through the list, like, maybe there was one or two, you know, obviously, like, Beast of No Nation, which was a Netflix original, which did its whole, you know, Academy Award rounds for campaigning. Roma was another one who actually won an award. The expectations of most originals were just so subpar. I mean, just looking at some of the originals here that I don't recall from Netflix, but
I do. Well, and I even pulled up the original movies because I was like, okay, let me check these movies, because we can say originals, and I'm going, there are some great originals when it came to anime or Korean or some of the other ones. The Dig, which had Ralph Fiennes in it, was super cool. The Irishman.
You've actually seen that?
Yeah.
The Dig.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really so.
I hear the doubt coming from
heavily,
the side.
Heavily. I will layer it on with another 2 tons. You saw The Dig. Just making sure here.
Yeah. So the concept of The Dig is that it's like after, it's right during World War II. Ralph Fiennes is, he calls himself an excavator, but he's basically an archaeologist. This widow has called him out to her property where there are these very large mounds just randomly all over her property. He goes in and he starts excavating and ends up finding a ship, literally a big, massive, I can't even remember what
century. What year was that?
2021.
I'm like, wait a second, what?
2021.
So okay, so it's a recent Netflix original.
Yeah.
Okay.
But so they also had the Irishman. I didn't see that one.
I was gonna say, I don't ever remember hearing you say you saw that one.
Okja. I never saw that one.
Are you naming ones just off the cuff or?
No, I'm putting them in order. Okay. Marriage Story in there, which I really liked. That was a Netflix original. That was Adam Driver and Scarlett Johansson.
Like, I mean, more modern, yes, as anything that grows, yes, you're going to get to more well-rounded ones. But, like, I mean, look at 2019. Did any of you ever see Triple Frontier? That was the one with with Ben Affleck and Oscar Isaacs.
I believe we did.
It was very forgettable.
I never seen this movie.
It was very forgettable. No offense, but well, full offense. It was very forgettable. But like movies like that, what was that other one? I think it was 2017. There was one with what's that guy that plays the Mexican guy from Ant-Man?
Oh, Michael Peña.
Michael Peña.
I was like, the guy that's in Crash that I still haven't seen, but he talks about constantly?
Yeah, the one that you haven't seen.
Look at all things I haven't seen.
Like, he did a movie on Netflix that was really just super garbage. The one where it was about the things that were invading, and come to find out that the things that were invading were actually people, and Michael Peña and the people who lived there were actually robots.
Oh, I remember seeing that.
You remember that, one?
Ugh, why did you remind me that existed?
And then that other one.
I don't
one,
like talking about all the
things. That other one, that, what was that? What was that one with Forrest Whitaker, where the world is like ending from like the right, or something's going on with the US, and like the world is ending from the right to left or something. And so him and his future son-in-law have to drive in a car to get to the West Coast for his daughter and whatever. And it's really weird. And
I remember that, but I don't remember watching it. Well, you know what else was a weird one? Bird Box.
Oh my God.
I didn't do that one. But also for 2020, Enola Holmes came out. The Old Guard. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom.
That was Amazon. Are we just... Oh, now
no,
we're...
No, that was Netflix.
Ma Rainey's... Oh, that's right, because there was that Netflix special that they had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and no, I'm not just naming things. I went looking.
I went looking.
Because it seems like... So, in juxtaposition, Hulu doesn't have much in the way of original content, and whether that was their decision as a platform to look for streaming rights versus creating original content... I don't know. So is this on par with what we've come to expect for streaming? I say this meets the criteria.
I don't think it's a matter of meeting the criteria. I think it's whether or not if it exceeds the expectations.
It exceeded my expectation from Hulu. Get it.
Well, I think it has to do with probably the style of the two companies and how they decide to fund.
Very true.
What their content strategy is. Netflix is like, we're spending $4 billion. You have an idea? Sure, 12-year-old kid. We'll give you a Netflix original series. Or Hulu's like, even though they're owned by Disney, let's shop around a little bit and see what's going on.
Well, and the fact that they spent that much money for an independent film from... You know, Sundance. It's sad the fact that like that type of form of distribution, which Netflix did at one point in time. They did purchase the distribution rights for Little Prince, mm-hmm. Which was originally going to be a Canadian release only. There are movies where recognizing the opportunity to purchase films, not just from anybody and everybody, like you go to Craigslist, hey, we're Netflix, want a spot on our streaming channel?
But that's kind of how they've been acting for a while.
But that's the thing, though. That's the sad part about it, is that those expectations are what kind of took over, especially for my mindset. Because when I think of an original streaming service film, I don't think highly of it. And this is one of those instances where, hey, this was actually, in my opinion, a very... a higher quality type of film coming out of a streaming service. Now, mind you, now we got HBO Max that has everything from Warner Brothers for the next 6 months left.
Everything is getting so confusing. There's too many streaming services.
Agreed.
And then Disney Plus has maybe here or there. Was Artemis Fowl an original?
Yeah. No,
it wasn't for.
It was for the theaters, and they just moved it over to Disney Plus. How dare they? Again.
And how dare?
How dare they? I don't think Disney Plus has actually put out an original Disney Plus movie. Yeah.
Outside of series, like they've done TV series.
Yeah.
Well, they've been very. They're cornering the original series market.
Yeah.
It seems. Mm-hmm. Which good on you. But we're also going to have expectations now because of the way that their limited series have come out and their originals, that we're going to expect that from everybody else too. So they're forcing people when it comes to the series to raise the bar. But as far as movies go, Netflix is still chomping at that bit, and HBO is coming in right behind them going, hey.
So here's the big question that I have for you guys then. Do we think streaming service original films, because obviously after the end of this year, HBO is going to be like, all right, it was nice knowing you guys, splitting ways, you know, hasta la zucchini. Like, they're eventually going to do that with Warner Brothers. Do you think the expectation of films to this kind of quality, to this kind of caliber, should become the norm for streaming service films?
I think there's still going to be a bit of lag. And that's because everyone is in a content fight right now. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, we need something to beat someone else. Just give us the thing. And once they have done that for long enough to where they're like really going through the cast, they're going to be like, okay, we need to be more picky. And that's when the quality bar will go up, I believe.
Or we'll get another Hubie Halloween or whatever it was.
Oh my God. Stop paying for Adam Sandler's vacations.
If you don't know what we were talking about, go check out, I forget what lesson it was, but when we talked about 50 First Dates, you'll understand what Spencer's talking about.
That was brilliant, though. Yeah, I totally agree. Everybody is in a content fight. And right now, it's kind of like, who's got the shinier... To harken back to a short, it's the little girl with the coins and the two...
Pixar short.
Yeah, the Pixar short where there's the little girl and there's the two musicians and they're each playing bigger and shinier to get her one gold coin. And then she just straight up shows them up. Like, you could probably make a meme out of that. And she's got all the gold coins.
Yeah.
Like, it's... I just hope that this doesn't deter... Well, I don't think it will. But that it doesn't deter independent filmmakers to continue to pursue the quality and the content that they want to create. Mm-hmm. And that there are people in the seats for... And people in the seats for the stream, like in the exec seats, that will be able and willing to come in, pick up their films, and let the public see them. Because I know you had mentioned that seeing this one in a box, like in the box office or in the theaters, like people would like this.
Yeah.
And it actually had box office numbers. Figure, because it had a limited release.
Yeah, there was a small release of the film in independent circuits. Like,
it had 66 theaters in its opening weekend, and then it had an additional 30 in its second. But it grossed $765,000, and their budget was about $5 million.
But that's also with like less than 100 theaters open.
Seems pretty impressive.
And yeah. they literally did it in the middle in July 2020, so smack in the middle.
Mostly drive-ins and areas where they still followed COVID guidelines.
Yeah, and it's just at least they were making anything, like anything at all. And then the number,
and they also made money off of selling the movie.
So they made a lot of money selling off the movie. But then also Hulu had mentioned that within the first, I think it was the first weekend, that 8.1% of its subscribers had seen this movie. And then a little bit later, it was 26% had seen this movie. And so at that point, you're like, hey, I think you're probably doing really good. So get it.
Yeah, I think it says a lot when you create a film that's on a platform like Hulu and you are able to draw in that many people. For just a unique film with a character, with an actor, with a character actor, I guess you could say, a character actor like Andy Samberg, whom doesn't really draw in a lot of people. I mean, he's not a big A-lister name actor, but it still broke numbers and it broke records. So I think that's got there's a lot of things to say that I honestly do feel like moving forward, even in this past year with. The like you were saying, the streaming war battles, if you will, you have now these giants in terms of streaming services, like with HBO Max obviously, and then Disney Plus, you know, and then the inclusion of Netflix upping their game. You have this opportunity to kind of rise to that occasion as a probably independent party as such, like Hulu, or even the smaller ones like Paramount Plus, you know, the ones who are coming up.
You mean
coming
CBS?
Up. Ugh, they're not CBS. Going anywhere. They're just going in a big circle with their broken swan boat.
Gee, Spence, tell us how you really feel. I feel like there's an opportunity here to see the quality of movies in the in-home, you know, movie market to kind of rise to the occasion and be on par with what we've expected with what we see in the theaters. You know, I think it's a safe bet to kind of have that mindset.
Yeah.
Agreed. Totally on that boat. Sorry, that really was a really, really bad segue. So, but going back to this film, since we've kind of jumped down that streaming rabbit hole. I don't know, that was weird. Are there any... So we've talked about the acting, we've talked about our impressions in relation to streaming and the quality. Are there any... Did anybody have any issues with this besides our... some of our apprehension of Adam Sandberg?
To be honest, I think with me, the moment this film began to strip away a lot of the cliche aspects of what you would come to expect with, number one, with a rom-com, and number two, with what you would expect with most time travel films. Not time travel in the sense of like being able to go back in time, but to kind of stay in that same time bubble.
So time loops.
Yes, that time loop kind of variation of a film. You have a very oddly satisfying movie where you ultimately find yourself feeling like, yeah, that character could be me in a situation like that. Like, I could, if I was in, like Spencer mentioned, in a time loop for 40 years, like, you would tend to grow a little loopy in terms of the way you saw the world around you. And you had mentioned it. It does adhere a lot to what we saw with Bill Murray's Groundhog Day. But even then, it still sets itself apart. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's great homages in this movie to movies about time, like towards the tail end when he's kind of mopey in the bar and he hasn't had the first drink, and that's very reminiscent of Back to the Future 3.
Yeah, I was thinking of that too.
With Doc, when how many has he had? Oh, it's his first one. He still doesn't drink it. It's like, hey, that's a great homage. That's a great callback. Even in the instances where they're like, hey, you know, I don't want to hear any more of your speeches, when he's about to do like a big old romantic gesture kind of speech, and she's like, I don't want to hear it. Just, okay, you get one sentence. And even though he still gets his slight speech, it still plays on that effect of like, hey, we recognize the cliches in most movies. We're going to avoid them, but we're still going to have fun with the idea of it. And it's hard to kind of knock on that, because it's a self-aware time loop film that knows all the keys, knows all the numbers, knows all the cliches, the no pun intended loopholes of like certain properties in physics, and it just has fun with the whole idea of it. I mean, for God's sakes, there's a scene where they see dinosaurs. Like, where
they're
in the world is
that? They're tripping out on shrooms, and they're in the desert, and they see dinosaurs.
Yeah, but they're
seeing
they're both seeing the same dinosaurs. That's not possible.
I mean, it could be some really good shrooms, apparently, because they kept saying they were really good shrooms.
They're wirelessly connected shrooms, apparently.
Yes.
I feel like it's really just saying that these people are so similar that they hallucinate the same.
Possibly. No, that's a really good point. If anything, that might have been a good like indicator that, you know, that was the moment when they realized they were meant for each other, you know.
So ridiculous.
It's so ridiculous, but it works. Oh my God. It's really hard to kind of, in my opinion, me personally, I don't know about you guys, but it's really hard for me to kind of drum up issues I've had with this film, when I was just telling Spence after I watched it, after I berated him about not telling me about it. I said, this movie has such rewatchability to it that, honestly, I wouldn't mind going back tomorrow on Hulu and seeing it again, or even going back, there's a commentary cut,
yes,
on Hulu,
which is the first one that they've ever released on according to Hulu.
Yeah,
it's the first time they've ever done a commentary.
You say it like
cut.
They lied about it.
I don't know.
Allegedly,
that's a cool. Well, everybody's like, according to Hulu.
And conspiracy theorists, oh, I gotta look this up. there's a commentary cut to, you know, Bridesmaid or Handmaid's Tale or whatever. So, earnestly, I don't really find any issues, oddly enough, with this film. It's one of those movies where I really did enjoy from beginning to end. everything that was happening. I mean, mind you, it is a little raunchy, but the raunchiness doesn't overpower the sense, the bigger scope of what is happening, which there is a time loop that people are stuck in, and they're ultimately acting like how real world people would act if they were stuck in a time loop that they could do whatever while at a wedding, and recognizing like the human flawed qualities of people that are stuck in that, because you have somebody who every time they wake up, one person is waking up to somebody who he is not happy with and hasn't been obviously happy with for 40 years. Mm-hmm. And you have somebody who is waking up to some sense of infidelity that just makes her feel like crap every time she wakes up. And you're like, yeah, that would suck. Like, as wonderful as it may be to be kind of stuck in that time loop to just experiment and do things, there is a sense of that coming home, you know, on a darker scale that appears in this film that one of the characters has to face every time she time loops back to the beginning. And it really does beg to ask the question of, what would you do? Would you stay in that time loop to do things over and over, or would you jump out of it for fear of, like Andy Samberg says, there's all these scary and crazy things on the outside of that time loop that he's afraid to go back into, so... Yeah, I didn't find any issues or problems. What about you, Spence?
Well, as our resident logic police here...
There you go, yeah.
No, like, actually, this movie does a fantastic job. Like, there's only light things I'd even bother to mention of like, how he even found this cave in the first place.
That's true. That's very good question.
Like, that's the only thing. I'm like, maybe he found Misty with, like, the Australian, and, like, he just ran into the desert and ran into the cave randomly. But, like... I'm not too big on that. And the other thing was, like, near the end of the movie, when they're talking about getting out, she was like, yeah, there was a goat I trusted us out on, and it just disappeared. And I'm like, but when J.K. Simmons comes back at the end, like, you guys are still there, even though it's not you. So what happened there? But...
Well, technically, in my thought process with that, just my understanding... Mm-hmm. Is that the goat made different decisions to not be where she found him in previous times?
Well, that makes it sound like they were just going to be trapped anyway, if they're going to be... Because then the goat's just like, I'm not going to let this lady blow me up again. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
The pain is real.
Well, no, that just makes it sound like it doesn't work at all.
Well, apparently it does, or doesn't. Who knows? I mean, to be honest, the thought process, although flimsy, is still all, like, hypothetical.
Yeah.
I mean, none of this is meant to... Like, although, I don't know if you guys know, the physicist that they had her talk to in the actual Zoom call...
The one guy that's like, you don't need... It sounds like you don't need...
He is a real physicist. Aww. Like, a real-life physicist. They got somebody who actually knows their stuff and kind of plays a riff on, like, well, I guess you don't really need my help. And she kind of gets this, like, oh, I guess I don't kind of mindset, so... What about you?
I really felt like, again, there's not a lot of issues. If you get super logic-y, yes, you will start poking holes in it.
Spencer.
He acknowledged he did fine. I think where it really deviates from other time-centric movies, whether loop or not, it doesn't take itself seriously.
No.
Which is what gives it such a freshness, because... Like, if we want to talk another time-traveling romance, you can talk about the lake house and that shenanigans. Like, we're not going to. We're going to leave it alone.
I mean, it's
a lake house.
It's not a bad movie.
Keanu
it's just...
Keanu Reeves and Sandra Bullock.
And something about a time-traveling mailbox.
The letters. The letters.
What? Oh, my gosh.
So, right? Because there's been a joke about it. So, this is just... It's a delight. And it's so easy to watch, and you get to see the character growth across the entire board with this. And much like me watching the first time I watched Groundhog's Day, and Bill Murray's got Punxsutawney Phil driving driving things, I'm just like, yep.
Spencer, have you seen Primer? You saw Primer, didn't you?
Very long time ago.
One of the unique... Have you seen Primer?
start talking about it, and I'll probably be able to tell you.
It was, it's a movie where someone builds one.
It's an independent film that is essentially about like almost the real life applications of creating a time machine, but it's not a real time machine. It does it through like sleep stasis, how it turns back like time in terms of.
It sounds vaguely familiar, but I cannot. They
all look like Mormons essentially because they're always wearing ties and white shirts.
I have not seen time traveling Mormons. Bland
looking people.
They do, but the movie is, if you're a time travel nerd, this movie does superbly in the science department of creating a real world kind of opportunity to see it happen, because it doesn't do like, oh, I'm traveling back to like 1952 and gonna invest in this. No, you're only able to travel back in time up to, I believe, 2 weeks at a time. And even then, it costs you like 12 hours of sleep or something in order for you to go back, because you have to be asleep in order for the stasis to do what it's going to do to your body.
Huh.
It's really interesting. But my point was, this movie did what Primer did for the real life kind of implications of time travel in reality. This movie did for real life personal experience in time travel or time loop practicality, in that taking into account not just the effects of what the time travel will do to people, or even what the effects of what, you know, the kind of universal kind of implications, you know, oh, if you see yourself in the future, you know, universal consequences are gonna happen, blah blah blah. This plays on the head of like, what if real people who have real world problems
who are
really stuck and are experiencing them in the present time have to experience this, and giving it the authenticity of what Andy Samberg does and Kristen Bell does, it really does translate to, you know, the layman of every person watching, like, yeah, like if I was this person, I would struggle with waking up every day and having a positive outlook on the world if this is what I had to wake up to every day. Or if I had to live through this for 40 years, almost to the point of forgetting.
You don't remember your job. You don't remember how old you are. You just know this has been November 9th. That's my birthday. As many days as there are. And there's no way for you actually to be able to tell the time of how many times this has gone through.
Because there's no way to record it.
And because every day, if you break your teeth, you get a tattoo, whatever, it's just going to be gone tomorrow. So you have no true way of knowing how long you've been anywhere.
Yeah.
Yes, that's sorry.
So
and he keeps throwing things to me, and my brain is just like, do you know what? This is a good movie, time travel.
Well, here's
traveling movies. Speaking of traveling and time travel,
oh my gosh. So here's the question, and the big question for you two, because there's a slight implication towards the tail end of the film that after Sarah has figured out how to break out of the time loop and makes one final opportunity.
She blows herself up.
And after making one final opportunity to make peace with her friends and her sister at her sister's wedding, there's an instance where her grandma, or whatever, you know, motherly figure,
Nana,
comes up to her, congratulates her on her speech, and then makes a very cryptic, you know, kind of farewell, you know, saying, well, now you're getting out of this, so I hope, you know, you're blah, blah, blah. And it leads to this kind of ambiguous thought that, you know, was Nana a part of the time loop? Like, was she stuck in that time loop? So this is the question I pose to the table. Do you guys think that Nana was a part of that time loop? Just to note really quick, even the filmmakers haven't answered this question yet. They've been posed and asked, and nobody's given a solid answer.
In other words, we are starting a Twitter campaign tomorrow, Spencer, to get answers.
Hashtag get Nana out of the loop.
She's totally in this loop. Yeah. How are these people are finding this dang cave? I have no idea. Like, because the movie only explains how J.K. Simmons is part of this and how what's her face is too.
Sarah.
But yeah, like no, she knows what's going on, and like she's just having the time of her life. Apparently, still, like she seems like she's like fine with just staying there.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Amy?
I agree. So the first time we see Nana is at the beginning, where she tells Niles that, oh, I've been to so many weddings and that was the best wedding speech that I've ever heard. And you're thinking, okay, she's just a crazy old lady. And then when Sarah's finally gotten the way out, and it's like, well, I guess we won't be seeing you for a little bit. Like the way she poses it, it's like, you'll be getting out of here soon. That's what she says. And you're like, wait a minute, I'm sorry, what? The fact that Adam Sandberg kind of identifies that, and with the director stating he's been in there for 40 years, he's not aging. The opportunity to die is just literally a blink away, and a reset. And so if Nana has been hanging out in this time loop, she can do whatever she wants and she never has to worry about dying, and she always has the opportunity to spend time with her family. It makes more sense that she would be in the loop. Now, whether this is the hellscape of limbo that everyone deserves, I don't know. But straight up, that cave, man. Like, they're finding, somehow, everybody's been finding this, like, one cave. I think
that cave is on Google Maps or Yelp or something. Everyone finds it, seems like.
2 stars. I went to the desert. And now I'm stuck in a time loop. 2 stars. And it erases. And the next
like
day,
that was like Misty.
It's literally, my boyfriend took me to a wedding. My best friend's wedding. Terrible cave. Hashtag 2 stars.
All right.
Follow me on Instagram.
On that note, as we wrap up this conversation, let's go ahead and go around the table and talk about whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Spencer, start this off, please.
Oh, this movie passes, and it is a fun watch. So if you have not seen this movie, definitely check it out. It's really fun, and it was a real like big surprise of 2020, which was a year full of terrible surprises.
Which the year itself was a horrible time loop. Let's be honest. It felt like 40 years there.
Yeah, that's also part of the reason why I didn't want to watch it at first. I was like, I'm already like
I'm already stuck in a bad
time. I'm living this movie almost. But yeah, for me, I'm going to give it 4 out of 5 monocles.
Nice. I'll go so that.
Oh.
The film definitely passes for me. It definitely creates that nostalgic feeling of films like Groundhog Day and films that create that sense of time-centric focusing, but still has a great story to tell on the outside of it, kind of like Andy Samberg's Twix reference. So I really love this movie. I really did enjoy it. I think I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5. This movie was fun. It was really enjoyable, and I definitely would love to see it again, probably soon. So what about you, Ames?
So this one passes for me, as we have established. This was my first time viewing it. It is delightful. I like rom-coms. And to quote the guy that wrote the review for Variety, Palm Springs does to time loop movies what Zombieland did to the undead genre. So this, now I'm going to give this sucker a 4.5 out of 5. I would rather have this as a time loop than Live, Die, Repeat.
Oh my god. Yeah, we're
we
not going to.
We don't accept movies that change their title after they've been released.
What was it? Live, Die, Repeat, and then it was...
Edge of Tomorrow was the first one.
Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah.
Garbage is what it should have been called.
Garbage.
By the way, did you know that's based on a graphic novel?
There's lots of things based on a graphic novel, including The Girl Who Leapt Through Time, which I really like that one. That's an anime movie about time loops.
Whale?
Right? Whale.
So, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmosophers. And this wraps up our theme of summer flings here at...
In cinema,
led by the one illustrious, intern, wonderful part-timer slash...
I can go back to naps now.
Intern slash stenographer Amy.
Stenography is my calling.
No. this was a great show. And like Sven said, if you have the opportunity, check it out. It is still currently on Hulu. In fact, the commentary cut is available. It has been available since January of this year. So check it out. Watch the film. It is an R-rated film, so please be mindful if you are not of age.
There's a lot of boom boom in the first like 15 to 20 minutes. So if you...
That's one way to put it.
If you had the opportunity to listen to the Amelie episode and we made note of the how many people in Paris are having orgasm sequence...
They're all happening at the same time.
They're all happening at the same time.
So creepy.
In the first act of, you know, Palm Springs. But no, this was a great episode and this was a fun series and I hope, you know, maybe we can revisit this again sometime next year. And who knows, maybe a different filmosopher will take the helm on it. I don't know.
The one that hates rom-coms across the table?
Spencer.
Eddie.
All right.
Oh, my goodness. We're going to die.
This was great. So, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern stenographer Amy.
You forgot part-timer. Class dismissed.